Is it the beginning of the end, or is it just the end of the beginning? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
It's good to be with you, Barry. Now, I'm going to retort your opening. What did Winston What did Winston Churchill say about that ends and beginnings thing? Do you remember the quote?
No, I wasn't there.
Parliament? Well, no. I would have been closer than you, and I was born many years after. No, what he said was, this is not the end. This is not the beginning of the end, but it most certainly is the end of the beginning.
Yes.
I think we're more in the end of the beginning phase than we are at the beginning of the end. But you can explain where you were going with that.
Well, we're going to explain that here in a little bit. But, you know, for right now, you know, the biggest thing, Chuck, you know, as we peruse and are looking across all the things that are happening in the world, you know, while we're prepping for the show, sometimes things pop up. And this one popped up, sadly enough. But it's more of a, see, look, we told you so moment. And not in a, you know, gloating way, but in a very chagrined, saddened, critically thinking kind of way. And if you haven't already heard, and you probably already have, but there's been a search that's been going on now for, I think, over 2 weeks, Chuck, right? I think it's 2 weeks.
Maybe longer than that, yeah.
Because you had a young college student in Iowa by the name of Molly Tibbetts who up and disappeared. She was supposedly, I think, taking her dog for a walk or something of that nature, and that was the last anyone ever saw of her. And, of course, there's been quite a bit, and there was some focus around a pig farm that was near where supposedly she walked in, the dog and things like that. And, you know, and there was an awful lot of attention paid to the farmer who owned the farm and, you know, and being interviewed more than, you know, multiple times. And, of course, they'd ruled out family members or her boyfriend slash fiance because, well, you know, he had a good alibi. He was on maneuvers with the military. he was not there. Well, we've just kind of closed the chapter on this mystery because what we have found out and what law enforcement found out is that they found Molly Tibbetts's dead body found in a cornfield in Brooklyn, Iowa. Now, yeah, it's been a month, Chuck. Actually, just a little over a month now, because it was July 18th was the last time anybody saw her. And, you know, as this story played out, and as you know, we were looking at, you know, what was going on, and of course, you know, again, most of the media attention and the, I guess, public thought or suspicion was toward whether or not the pig farmer may have been pulling some kind of a Toby Hooper moment and, you know, was donning a leather mask and a chainsaw or whatever.
Oh, my gosh. You better tell people what you mean.
Wild cultural references.
Yeah. If you don't know who that is, that's Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Texas Chainsaw, yeah, exactly. Toby Hooper is a director who directed that movie. It's one of his most famous. But what we've come to find out is, and the police have found out, because they have now taken into custody a gentleman by the name of Christian Bahena Rivera, 24-year-old person who is being charged with first-degree murder in the death of college student Molly Tibbetts. Okay, all right, fine, close the books. Oh, not so fast.
Yeah.
It seems that Christian Bahena Rivera, this 24-year-old, is a Mexican national who was in this country illegally. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You have a situation now that is probably going to be the marquee moment for the push against sanctuary cities, for the push for border protection, and for the push toward helping ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to do their job and arrest and deport those who have entered this country criminally. Because it is. It's a criminal act, Chuck, to invade the country.
It absolutely is. Okay, if you and I forced our way into Canada.
Right.
Two guys who are run successful businesses by some, you know, by some definitions, by others not so much. Two guys, and we decided that we were going to force our way into Canada. Canada wouldn't give us the paperwork, so we're going. What would happen to us in Canada?
We would be summarily probably pulled to the side by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police or other law enforcement officials. Cuffs would be slapped on us. They would do investigation, and then they would call our consulate and send us back home.
Yeah, and after they probably, we may have to serve some time in a Canadian jail first.
Very, very well could. And I know for certain we'd serve time in a Mexican jail.
Oh, my gosh.
Gone across the southern border.
Mexico... Mexico is one of the worst players regarding, and I don't necessarily mean it's bad, in protecting their border. They will shoot you coming across. Well, they don't really have a southern border if you look at a map. I had an argument with what a guy says. There is no northern border in Mexico. And I laughed and I said, you need to look at a map, bud. I think it's Guatemala that has a northern border with Mexico.
Yes.
They do have a western and eastern border. So yeah, it's the curve of the land, but I said you're splitting hairs. The fact is anybody coming across the border that they have in the south that actually faces east and west with other countries and also south, they will shoot you if you try to come across illegally.
Absolutely.
And no apologies. You will be shot. Other countries,
right.
In South America, okay, what's going on in South America? And don't kid yourself, there's a lot of people from South America that end up coming illegally across the border. Well, in order to guard themselves against Venezuelan refugees who are doing anything they can to get out of,
Venezuela.
The socialist paradise, Venezuela, that created by, what's his name there, who was the dictator down there?
Hugo Chavez,
who Sean Penn went down and pushed as the great liberator of Venezuela, who essentially destroyed it.
He did. He liberated them from economic prosperity and hope.
All their neighbors have militarized their borders to keep them from coming across. Why? Because they're coming in as refugees and destroying the economies of their neighbors.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
This is the hypocrisy, the major league hypocrisy that we see. You know, Mexico screaming that we have to take their immigration stream. And what are the reasons for that? Well, it's kind of obvious. The obvious reason is that they don't have the economic powerhouse to be able to handle people streaming into the country or their own population, which is exploding through birth. They're telling the United States, you have to be our pressure valve. No, we don't. What you need to do, Mexico, is free up your economy and stamp out corruption so that business can come in and be safe to invest and create jobs. Instead of being a place where, if you are successful, you stand a pretty good chance of being kidnapped and murdered. Kidnapped for ransom, and then even after they pay the ransom, you'll be murdered. Listen, I know someone. I had a client here that was a relatively big client of mine who had a clinic in Mexico through my business, Rocky Fork Formulas, who is a sponsor of this program. Well, actually, Rain Rock Nutritionals, which is wholly owned subsidiary of Rocky Fork Formulas. One of my clients in Mexico was a doctor. He had a clinic down there, and he ordered very regularly, a couple thousand dollars worth a month. And suddenly he stopped ordering, and I got a call from one of his girlfriends, who was an American. I think it was his current girlfriend. And she said, have you heard from Hugus? His name was Hugus Bellevue. And I said, no, I have not. And I've been wondering, when she goes, he's missing. Okay, in Mexico? And I said, what do you mean missing? And she goes, well, it's pretty sure that he was kidnapped. And I knew right away. I'm like, oh, gosh, he's done. And sure enough, he's never been found. This has been several years ago. He's never been found. He's murdered. You know, they took him out, murdered him, took him out in the desert, and he was picked apart by animals.
Wow.
It's the way it's done. And there are suspicions about who was involved in it, but nobody can prove anything because the police down there are not very good at their jobs. Not good. When I say that, I put it in terms, perhaps it's cultural, but I put it in terms of American police departments and their murder rate solvation rates, which is pretty good, except in some areas. In Chicago, I think it's like 19%, which is real bad. Other places, it's 60 or 70% of their murders get, they don't do anywhere close to that. They don't even reach Chicago level in Mexico.
Okay, sure.
So look, is it a different world and a different culture? Yes, it is. Do we necessarily want to import that? No, we don't. Is every immigrant that comes across illegally like this? No, they're not. But how do we vet them? If we can't even have a look at them, if we can't pick them up, and we can't put them in jail and run them through the deportation cycle. I always laugh when I hear how they handle deportation here. They arrest you, they arraign you, tell you to show up for court for your deportation hearing at a certain date, 6 months or a year from now, and then they turn you loose.
Right. Right. Well, that's a historic way it's been happened. Now, with this individual, Immigration and Customs Enforcement has actually taken over the custody of this gentleman, and I'm using that term loosely. He's no gentleman, and we know for sure that he is the culprit because he led police to the body. It wasn't that the police found it and then they kind of figured him out. They had him pegged. He admitted it and took them to where he'd left her body. So this one's fairly open and shut. Now, what's not open and shut on this, Chuck, is the question had arisen on this. Where was he working? What was he doing? Of course, now, today, we're recording this on Wednesday, the left is going apoplectic. This is all the Republicans' fault, you know, Chuck. This is all the Republicans' fault because, well, this guy happened to be working on a farm as a farmhand. And supposedly, he was working for, now this is how the left thinks, Charles. So follow me here because this is not going to make any real logical train of thought sense. This gentleman who has violated the laws of this country, being here to start with, was working on a farm owned by the relatives of a gentleman, a Republican office holder who ran for the Iowa Attorney General a number of years ago. So that makes it the Republicans' fault. It's all the Republican Party's fault, that according to the left. The big problem is when you start delving into this just a little bit more, you start finding out a couple things. Like, first of all, they're starting to piece together that this individual has been in this country illegally from between 4 to 7 years. That puts him back coming into this country in the middle of whose administration?
Yes.
Okay, but there's more, Chuck. There's more. Because after coming into this country illegally during the administration of Barack Hussein Obama, somehow, some way, and I'm not sure because I'm sure this will develop out in a pretty fashion as well, the individuals who own the farm that this, now we understand, illegally present individual was working, holds a clean I-9 for him.
Yep.
Now, Chuck, You want to let people know what an I-9 is?
An I-9 is a form that you get that shows you've passed an E-Verify background check.
Bingo! That's the check that they make on people to make sure they're here in the country legally.
Yep.
So somehow along the way, during the administration of Barack Hussein Obama,
yep,
Christian Bahena Rivera. And if you think about it, Chuck, if he'd been in this country for 7 years, at what age did he enter the country?
Well, let's see.
He's 24. Yeah. He's 24. Do the math.
Yeah.
17. Which means he came in under what? During the Barack Obama administration.
DACA.
DACA!
The Dreamers
Absolutely.
Act. Yeah.
See, folks, when you start drawing the lines between these dots, the picture starts getting a lot clearer. This is what the left is trying to have happen. We must, these children, these poor children, need to be brought into the country and legalized, and doesn't matter how they got here, except problem is these poor children entering the country illegally. Now, whether or not the DACA program had anything to do specifically with Christian Bahena Rivera's getting an I-9, and I'm guessing that as we dig into that, that's probably exactly how he got a clean.
Yeah, my guess would be yes. Yeah, he came in as a dreamer.
But he's supposedly, though, he's here illegally because he's never gotten any other paperwork.
Yeah, because you were supposed to apply for citizenship.
Bingo.
Within a certain time frame, and he's well outside that.
Well outside
that. If he's been here for 7, he's been working at this farm for 4, so he's been here for longer than 4 years, because it takes time to get that paperwork. I mean, to get your I-9.
To get your I-9s, that's right. So that's the reason why they're thinking between 4 and 7 years. So if they track back that our now self-admitted murderer of Molly Tibbetts, a 20-year-old college student who, as we are we looking at, we don't know if she had any relation with this gentleman at all. That he could very well could have been a complete stranger who just decided that he was going to cause her harm. And we don't know, and of course, you know, there'll be a medical examination, et cetera, et cetera. We don't know if there was any assault or molestations or anything like that, or if this just gentleman, for some reason, maybe he had come up to her on the college campus or something and she rebuffed him. Who knows? You know, it's hard to say what the motivation was, but I'm sure we'll probably find out. But right now, I think it's absolutely the height of hypocrisy for leftists to be screaming about how the Republicans are at fault for this, when the case facts on this matter point squarely back at liberal policies.
Okay, now, I think you and I can both, and the audience can take a guess, we don't have to, what the bone of contention between the two was.
Oh, but probably.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have to spell it out. Now, what's interesting about this young girl, now what I'm hearing is, and I don't want to put this out as fact, I'm trying to check up on it, but that she was a typical college age, currently, social justice warrior who didn't, quote unquote, didn't like white people. Well, what that leads to, some of the junk, is to be too trusting of people who meet the criteria for being angelic, if you know what I'm saying. What you'll hear in college is that all these foreigners, they just want to be here. They're quiet people. They're nice people. They're great people. No, they're not. They broke the law to come here. And I very often I understand why, because sometimes things are pretty bad in the places that come from. Nonetheless, they broke the law to come here when there is a mechanism for coming here legally. Why did they not want to do that? Because they didn't want to take the time. They were just going to come. They were pretty sure they weren't going to get accepted, so therefore they just decided to come anyway. they paid way more money in many cases to get brought over by coyotes than they would have paid for any permitting and that kind of thing through the United States Embassy in whatever country they came from. But so this girl was lulled into a sense of probably lulled into a sense of being relaxed around people like this, and it looks like her. Well, I'll say her college professors are partly at fault, partly.
Okay.
But let's lay the blame where it belongs. It belongs with the perpetrator. He's 100% of the blame really goes on him. He chose to do this thing. Well, let's say allegedly, because he's not convicted yet. Okay. I've served on a jury before. And honestly, we found a guy not guilty of something. Why? Because state didn't prove the case. They had their chance to prove it and didn't do it. Okay. There's another facet to this thing, and that has to do with some of the reaction of some of the press to some of this.
Oh, but of course.
You go ahead. I'm looking at
it. Please go right ahead with it. Take the head of steam. Run with it.
Okay. There is a site called Twitchy. And what Twitchy does is it picks up Twitter tweet, some things like tweets. And it has picked up the tweets of some people who are working for the press. For instance, the AP. Listen to how Zeke Miller, who was an AP correspondent, he's a White House reporter for AP, put his take on this. Listen, this is a quote. "Likely coming to a Trump rally near you. Investigators suspect in Molly Tibbetts' death is in custody, subject to immigration detainer." In other words, we are now making fun of a murder by politicizing it, by turning it back on President Trump, as someone replied to him and said, "I don't think coming to a Trump rally is the story here, just a hunch."
Well, okay, and of course that was exactly, thank you, that was exactly what I was going to lead into, was, as you mentioned, the left is making this out to be it's all the Republicans' fault because the people who hired this guy, who had a clean I-9, by the way, again, I want to reiterate that, he had an I-9 form that showed that he was okay to be in the country. That's what they, obviously, Chuck, that means they were following the rules. They knew they had to have specific paperwork in order to hire an individual who was not a citizen of the country. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's straight up. They're following the rules. So now the left, the progressive social justice, do anything to get in power left, is now trying to make this out that because they were related to someone who's a Republican and was an Iowa public official years ago, this is how tenuous the cook is, Chuck, that all of a sudden now that makes it's the Republicans' fault that this happened. Now, the Republicans' fault that, I don't know if maybe that Molly Tibbetts is dead, or maybe they're more moaning and groaning about that Christian Bahena Rivera is being detained by ICE, because we all know how the progressive left feels about the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. They want to shut it down because they believe that that's insensitive and cruel to actually enforce our laws against illegal entry. Hey, be that as it may, but that tweet you just talked about makes a little bit more sense now, because you know what was happening. This is Wednesday we're recording on.
Right.
And you know where I live.
By the way, this is for our show.
We had a little event happen pretty close, I mean within an hour's drive of me.
Yes.
Last night, and that is at Charleston, West Virginia. The President of the United States held a rally. And of course, that rally was mainly toward helping Pat Morrissey, the West Virginia Attorney General, in his race against U.S. Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat who has been all over the boards on every issue of importance to the citizens of the state. He's one day he's for Planned Parenthood, the next day he's for pro-life, one day he's for coal, the next day he's for, you know, greater environmental regulation, one day he's for guns, the next day he's for gun control. he's all over the board.
Yeah.
I swear, you could go down and look at this guy, the list of this guy's background and his public statements. He's all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, but he's now trying to hitch his wagon onto certain things of the Trump administration, but the one thing that's probably third rail for him is immigration issue, because it's a test of orthodoxy for his party that you be for open borders. Well, big problem is that the president, like I said, came into Charleston last night. The Charleston Civic Center, Chuck, is like any other arena in a mid-level city, right? It'll hold probably 20 to 30,000 people, maybe a little bit more, right?
That's a big arena for a medium-sized town.
Not the cavernous, you know, depths of Ohio Stadium, which had a big rock concert up there over the weekend, and they held over 100,000. But, you know, 20, 30,000 people, you know, a fairly sizable place where, you know, they have college basketball games and concerts and things of that nature, which was packed to the gills last night.
And people waiting outside.
Yeah, let me just be quite honest. I didn't go. I could have, you know, tickets. It was free to get in. I could have gone and actually probably should have taken my kids, but I figure Trump's going to be back in Ohio pretty soon.
Yeah, it won't be long.
He's going to be here Friday night. So, you know, this will play on Saturday, the night before. He will be here in Ohio in Columbus at the convention center for the state Republican Party's annual dinner. He's the keynote. This president gets around. But while he was in West Virginia last night, this was less than, you know, 8 hours after the news had broken that Molly Tippett's body had been found and her killer had been arrested, and that he was here in the country illegally. Well, President Trump gave some time in his comments at this rally to note that what happened, and he said, "You heard about today the illegal alien coming in, very sadly, from Mexico, and you saw what happened to that incredible, beautiful young woman." And he said, "Should never have happened. Illegally in our country," he said. "We've had a huge impact, but the laws are so bad. The immigration laws are such a disgrace. We're getting them changed, but we have to get more Republicans," unquote. In other words, he's saying, the reason why our immigration laws are horrible is because leftist Democrats were in control long enough that they made them horrible. Now, Chuck, you and I both know that's partially true, because it takes Republican votes also to get some of these things through, and it takes, especially when you have a split, when the House is run by Democrats and the Senate's run by Republicans and vice versa, it takes collusion among the two parties or compromises between the two parties in order to get some of these things passed. Some of these things were just done by executive order, you know, the whole Bill Clinton idea, stroke of the pen, law of the land, kind of cool, the Paul Begala quote, but, you know, Barack Obama probably wrote more executive orders than almost any sitting president in our lifetime, and Donald Trump is using his power of the executive pen to undo many of those executive orders. But that's probably the reason why the left's screaming, trying to make this it's the Republicans' fault, because, well, let's just be quite frank about it. Trump's got a good point here that he's going to pound on between now and the November midterm elections. The Republicans have got a fairly decent rallying cry now for the midterm elections. And I find it interesting, too, Chuck, you know, because you and I have talked about this before, this blue wave thing. You know, as many of the never-Trumper Republicans, including our own, I even hate to say the word, Governor John Kasich, who has bemoaned a blue wave and the loss of all of this to the Democrats and blah, 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 blah. Well, we know, as we're seeing, oh, by the way, latest news in the 12th Congressional District race, Troy Balderson's lead has suddenly ballooned because of the late returns that were issued, the provisionals and the absentees in both Muskingum and Delaware County have driven his numbers up to where he's going to, it looks like it's going to be way out of the range of an automatic recount.
It's about 2,000,
and then he will be seated as the next congressman for the 12th Congressional District. So it's pretty much a done deal at this point. Even the Dispatch has stopped reporting on it because they know that there's no way they can get Danny O'Connor over the line. But, so, there's no blue wave. Florida on Tuesday, Chuck, had a, either this Tuesday or last Tuesday, had a primary. Now, in the state of Florida, Chuck, there are many more registered Democrats than there are Republicans.
By far, yeah.
By far. But in a blue wave year, in a key battleground state like Florida, you would have expected the numbers to be overwhelmingly Democrat, right?
You'd think.
I mean, after all, there's an awful lot in play. Except for the fact that it looks like the numbers turned out, and it was very low turnout. Let's just put it this way, low turnout across the state of Florida. It looks like across the state of Florida, over 500,000 Republicans turned out for the primary. This is a special. And only 400,000 Democrats. Where's the blue wave?
Yeah. The blue wave doesn't exist. We talked about it. If you want to know what our thought was on the supposed blue wave, I think the last week's show. Was it last week's show?
Last week or the week before last, we talked extensively about about the blue shrug, I think.
The blue ebb.
Blue ebb, that's it.
The blue ebb. It's definitely an ebb tide. No, the fact there are a number of very good reasons why this was a much closer election in the 12th congressional district than it should have been. And honestly, the greatest contributing factor is a complete lack of excitement for having Troy Balderson as the congressman from this district.
Well, yeah, that and with the case of our sitting governor who honestly, Chuck, it's one of those things that the more he talks out opposed to the guy, the more you kind of wonder if he doesn't have a secret man crush on him. John Kasich, it's palpable how much he dislikes Donald Trump, period.
Oh absolutely.
To the point where he has now publicly announced that he is not going to be going to the Ohio Republican Party's annual dinner because Trump's going to be the speaker. Well, I don't know, Chuck, and I'm just speculating, but my guess is ticket sales went up knowing that Kasich was not going to be in the room.
Well,
especially more conservative members of the Ohio Republican Party. Hey, listen, they're buying out the convention center for a dinner, okay? Now, yes, granted, it's their state dinner. But this is the first time I've ever heard they had to have the venue that big.
Exactly. And there will be people waiting outside, just like I'm guessing there were people waiting outside in Charleston.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, well, there were people. People started lining up yesterday morning to get into the Civic Center for this event. And, you know, a friend of mine, a pastor and his family, they were there. They went. They had photos from inside and everything. But, you know, again, there were people who stood out in line for hours to get into that, and they packed that place out. And if you saw any of the media from it, you know, you just see these walls and waves of human beings, on all sides, going all the way up to the rafters in this place to listen to President Donald Trump. Now, Chuck, I don't know about you, but I've been to a couple of these presidential rallies in the past. Just to hear out, I remember my very first one, my high school government teacher basically took a handful of us from our class. We went to Columbus, we went to Ohio State, and we heard Ronald Reagan. And, dude, I was like 30 feet from the stage. It was very impressive.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Now, this was Ronald Reagan not in the Ohio Stadium, but over at the Mershon Auditorium, which holds about 17,000, and it wasn't completely full. Okay. I have seen rallies. I've been involved in rallies where George Bush was the keynote. Also held in an arena and also not completely full. I've never seen anything like Donald Trump. Everywhere he goes, they're packing out stadiums and arenas. Packing them out.
Yeah.
And it isn't just and honestly, Chuck, I gotta say, if the Democrats, the left and the never Trumpers think that there's some way that they are going to be able to beat this guy in 2020. And John Kasich, that's part of his little shtick, is, you know, he'll run against Trump and give him a primary in 2020. they got to be dreaming.
Well, look, this is part of what gave it away for me in 2016, that Hillary was playing to venues that were mostly empty, to 1,500 people when she'd show up, and Trump was packing out 20,000 seat arenas.
Yep.
With people waiting outside, doing, you know, offering people to let them, you know, offering people money to let them, you know, jump ahead in the line, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
That was a giveaway.
So I will say something. It is the beginning of the end, I think, for radical free illegal immigration in this country. Because I think that between having an administration who's serious about it, having a number of, now not all, but a number of elected officials who are finally starting to come around to the idea that this is a big problem, and having, you know, and you mentioned, was it Kate Steinle?
Yes, Kate Steinle, killed by an illegal immigrant in 2014 in San Francisco with a stolen federal agent's gun.
Right, exactly. So you have all of these things piling up. I believe that it's not only the beginning of the end for radically open borders and illegal immigration, and honestly, maybe even for DACA at some point. If it comes to find out that this guy was here in the country because of the DACA program, I think that there'll be quite a bit of howling and moaning and gnashing of teeth among the leftists, because how are you going to spend that? Now, what they're hoping is, and I believe, again, you and I have said this, that it's the, I think it's the beginning of the end of this whole idea that there is some blue wave about to sweep over the country and take out Republicans and all the left, you know, are going to be, you know, walking into positions of power and authority because of their great ideas like, you know, radical free DACA and eliminating ICE. And just let's keep going down the list. But then again, you still have people who I think are a little tone deaf.
Yeah.
And this is the other thing is, obviously, the leftist media, including Hardball, which is Chris Matthews, one of the biggest leftists in television, has on, of course, gleefully, a former White House staffer by the name of Omarosa.
Oh my gosh, you're kidding. They gave Omarosa...
Who has been embarrassing herself because her tell-all book is starting to seem like it's tell-anything. Meaning...
She makes
She's
it up.
Fabricating.
She cut it out of whole. Yeah, she cut it from whole cloth, as they say.
Cut from whole cloth, but that makes her the darling of the leftist media. So they had her on Hardball, and she basically said, "Well, you know," and talking about this whole idea, and then if we have a little bit of time, we'll talk about it. That the Mueller team finally got a conviction against Paul Manafort for, illegal money use. In his own private business. So therefore, they're calling that a wonderful thing we're going to bring Trump down with it. And she said, today, and I quote, today changed everything. This is the beginning of the end for Donald Trump. I have to laugh because I'm like, okay, you're saying that at the same time he's packing out civic centers and stadia in little podunk West Virginia, historically bluest of the blue states, who's turning bright red, by the way.
Yes.
And you seem to think that this thing with Paul Manafort and even with Michael Cohen is going to be the thing that brings him down. Okay. Michael Cohen, his former attorney,
yes,
is, you know, now singing big songs that, oh, yeah, Trump directed me to pay off all of these women, you know, blah, 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 prior to the election. Well, I think what's happening is that, and I think as you start digging into it, is Michael Cohen probably took it upon himself to do a bunch of stuff outside of the direction of his client and is now trying to spin it so that he gets a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Well, look, do I necessarily think that if Donald Trump is as clean as the driven snow regarding affairs with these women? No, I don't. And I never have thought that. I mean, I was never a huge fan of Donald Trump. This is one of the reasons. I have seen the women that he seems to attract, and why he would waste his time with Stormy Daniels, I really don't know if he actually did waste his time with Stormy Daniels. But the fact that the President of the United States had a guy who did some paid to get a non-disclosure agreement from a couple of women. Yeah, a rich guy. Yeah, probably happened. Is this
there was probably a stand? It was probably a standing order. I mean, okay, yeah. Everybody knows Trump wasn't a choir boy, and you know, he. When you're a multi-billionaire, sometimes you have situations where, yeah. You know, you have to. You have a. Yeah, I hate to say this, but many of them have a slush fund just for these type of
exactly
inconveniences.
Well, there's also they very often pay off false accusers. Why? Because it's cheaper.
It's cheaper just to pay them off and make them go away than to have to drag it out and deal with it.
Bingo.
And do all the stuff. And then come to find out at the end they're completely lying about it, but it's cost you millions of dollars instead of a few hundred thousand.
Instead of or even, look, they're not even talking that kind of money to these women. Nothing like that kind of money. It's tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, one of them's a former playmate who... they're shocked that men have the idea that maybe since they appeared naked in a magazine that they'll appear naked in their hotel room. Do you have a complete logical disconnect here? And the
many
answer
do.
Is very often
sadly
yes,
enough, many
yes they do. Yeah, the answer is yes. So all I had, there's a magic word and it's no. The press will play up the story as long as they're a member of the correct party. For instance, how many years did the press run interference for Bill Clinton? Now they're done doing that. Why? Because his political usefulness is over. You know, and now women are coming out. You know, I defended this guy, and it was a big mistake. Yeah, it was a big mistake at the time. Now it's completely irrelevant. Doesn't matter anymore because who cares? Now, what these guys really think that Mueller's going to be interested, and he may be in something about the payoff to these women. The answer to that is so what? So what? You think that's an impeachable offense that 10 years ago Donald Trump had an affair and paid the woman to be quiet? Okay. If you manage to grab the House, if you understand the mechanics of impeachment, the House indicts, the Senate tries.
Right.
If you manage to grab control of the House, and that's looking less and less and less and less and less likely with every passing week, you might get an indictment. Will you actually get a conviction in the Senate? You're not going to get a conviction in the Senate. Listen, there was direct evidence by his own admission. Bill Clinton lied in a grand jury hearing. If you still believe that Bill Clinton got impeached because he had an adulterous affair with a 19-year-old girl in the White House, then you bought the propaganda, because that's not why. He got impeached because he lied about it, about numerous affairs
under oath
in a trial or
not,
in
not
a deposition.
Not that he made up a story in the public media. He lied about he falsified his testimony under oath.
Which is why he lost his law license.
Yep.
That's exactly why he was disbarred, because he lied under oath. The fact is, he committed an impeachable offense by lying under oath in a trial.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, did Donald Trump lie under oath in a trial while he was president of the United States? No. No. He didn't. So why would this be an impeachable offense?
No.
It would not be. Now, do I think he, again, is he pure as the driven snow? Certainly not. Has he ever done anything underhanded? I don't know. He may have. He's a land developer, for crying out loud. He's had to survive in one of the ugliest places to do business in the world, and that's New York City. And you don't get there by being a choir boy.
No, not at all.
So let's dispense with this idea that we're looking at the world through rose-colored glasses on this. We're not. And I have brought some of these things up to people who are Trump bots, and I immediately get attacked as a liberal, and I'm like, no, I'm bringing up facts. I mean, you need to be cognizant of these things. Do I think he's done a good job as president? Oh, my gosh. I think he's done a wonderful job as president. Am I happy with absolutely everything he's done? No. I think he's compromised in places where he didn't need to. But he's a populist. He's going to do that kind of stuff. He wants to make deals. He's a deal maker. He's very good at that. He's very good. He knows when he has to give up to get what he wants. And he has, you know, he gathers all this stuff. And people say, well, we'll do it if you give us this and this and this. Well, I'm willing to surrender that for this.
Yeah.
He's a deal maker. And he's a real good one, too. I mean, he's very good. You know, people are talking about, I was thinking about this the other day because I'm critical of him on this whole stand for the pledge thing, or, you know, stand for the national anthem thing in the NFL. If the NFL wants to commit economic suicide by having their players do that, he should back away. But I remembered, my son-in-law and I were talking about this, and I said, do you know what the only team in the old USFL, United States Football League, that made money was? And he said, yeah, the New Jersey Generals. And I said, yeah, who owned him? Donald Trump owned the New Jersey Generals. He's the only, there may have been one other team that made money. But Donald Trump also made the mistake of one of the reasons the USFL folded instead of becoming a viable spring league was they decided to go head-to-head with the NFL in the fall. That was a bridge too far. So does he make mistakes? Yeah, he does. He had a fledgling football league that one or two teams was making money at. Well, what eventually happened? Who got NFL franchises within just a few years? Several of the cities. Jacksonville, Memphis, what's the one in the Carolina? Where do the Carolina Panthers play? They play in Charlotte. Yeah, Charlotte got a team, which I think had a USFL franchise. So, is the guy smart? Oh yeah, he's real smart. And he knows how to make a deal. Is he a good businessman? Yeah, he knows how to play the regulations and how to play the market. Are you going to get him impeached on the word of a guy like Michael Cohen, who is a shady character, let's say? Probably not. And the answer is, so if this is what Mueller's got, then Trump is correct to hit him with a Twitter storm. And you sent me something about that, didn't you, Barry? About exposing guys like Mueller.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and, you know.
Well, the question is, do we have time?
Oh, we have about 10 or 11 minutes.
Okay, all right. Okay. Well, anyhow, you know, we were talking about this and we're looking through, as I do, I'm looking through a number of different sources and I'm trying to remember exactly what I said to you. I basically said that, you know, what better way to marginalize someone than to expose them to extensive public scrutiny? Now, what I was talking about was this whole thing with John Brennan, the former CIA director, who's screaming and moaning about his security clearance being lifted.
Yeah.
Yeah. By Trump. By the administration basically said, you're a former, and it's time for you to surrender your security clearance because, well, frankly, there's no necessary reason for you to have one. And, of course, as I'm thinking through this, Chuck, and I've been reading, a number of individuals that I know who work in the government are all saying, God, when I left my position, I had to surrender my security clearance. Why is he so special? You know, it's like usually when you leave a position and you're no longer going to be in the government service, you don't keep a security clearance. You don't get to come back in and look at sensitive or top secret or classified information. You know, and you certainly shouldn't be able to do that if you're out then selling yourself to the highest bidder as a consultant.
And that's exactly why these guys desperately want to keep their security clearances.
They desperately want to keep their security clearances. And basically what I said was, what better way to marginalize somebody like that than expose him to extensive public scrutiny? He knew Brennan was going to get furious about this, and he was going to go blab, and he's going to go talk. And the more Brennan gets on TV moaning and groaning about how horrible Trump has treated him, the cheaper his stock's becoming. Because if you are a significant firm and you know, okay, well, this guy's on the wrong side of the president, he's lost his security clearance, how many big six- or seven-figure gigs is he going to get?
Not many.
And I'm like, you know, and I basically said to you, Trump's bringing down the resale value of Brennan like a fire sale.
Exactly.
And he knows it. He knows how to go after his opponents. And
that's a hit in the breadbasket. I mean, it's a punch to the solar plexus when you're not ready for it. I mean,
and I have to say, okay, first of all, okay, let's just say, okay, first, number one, none of the charges which Paul Manafort were convicted for have anything to do with this phrase, Russian collusion.
No.
Not a thing. It has to do with his private business interests outside of anything he did for the Trump campaign, outside of anything he did for the White House. So I'm not sure, again, this is that liberal logic about, you know, there's something extremely tenuous here. Let's connect it and say that it's an absolute cause and effect. I don't see it. It's not happening. Cohen, on the other hand, well, again, this is a situation that if Trump's, you know, if he did, Cohen was directed by the candidate to pay these women off to keep them shut up before the election. Did he use campaign money to do it? Or did he use his private money? If he used his private money, sorry, guys, that's well within the bounds of something he can do.
Well, not only that, he should sue the two women for the payments
for
back.
For breaking confidentiality.
Yeah, exactly, because that's what they got paid for.
Let's not be naive. Let's not be Pollyanna-ish and kid ourselves here. This is happening a lot, okay? We're seeing, you know, as we see this thing with Me Too movement breaking across the country and, you know, the Weinstein and everything, well, now you find out it's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend or something of that nature, because let's just take that for example. Harvey Weinstein, big power producer in Hollywood, now accused by many women of sexual improprieties in exchange for them getting roles. One of his first accusers who's got this ball rolling was a Italian-American actress by the name of Aja Argento. Now, her father is famous, Chuck. He was a director of movies in Italy that were called giallos, which are like murder mystery, kind of over-the-top graphic, but really popular in the 70s and 80s. And this guy was like the master of them, okay? He like created an entire genre around it. And giallo is Italian for yellow, because it's basically these yellow-covered novels that were these lurid, salacious murder mysteries that he basically took his, you know,
his movies from. Yeah, he took his scripts,
movies. Well,
his
he didn't exactly, but he took his inspiration from them.
Yeah.
So his daughter, Asia, and it's A-S-I-A, so it looks like Asia, but it's Asia Argento, was one of the first accusers of Harvey Weinstein, that he basically had forced himself on her and ordered for her to get parts in Hollywood. Well, worm turning all the way around, Asia Argento has now been accused of doing the exact same thing that she accused Harvey Weinstein of doing with a 17-year-old young man who, and this was years ago, okay?
Not that long
five
ago.
Years. Yeah. This was 5 years ago. She was 37 and he was 17. And supposedly she paid him off a lot of money.
A lot.
a lot. It was over $200,000, I believe, if I remember correctly. To keep him quiet about the fact that she had had sex with him while they were filming a movie. Surprise.
She was the director of the movie.
She was the director as well. But basically, what she did was, you know, what she was doing violated state law, violates a lot of laws about having sexual relationships with an underage minor. But so now there have been photos that have come out, not specifically showing anything salacious directly, and could be stills from the movie. You never know. But basically showing them lounging together on a bed. Okay? Take it for what it's worth. But the fact that she basically paid in April of this year $380,000 to this young man, who's now 22. Now she's claiming she didn't have any sexual relationship with him, and he's claiming I'm not sure if he's claiming it or not, but I'm sure that he's probably going to be talking more as it comes out. But it's fine and interesting because you've got these situations, and again, people are doing it. Now with her situation, she's trying to cover up a criminal act. In the other situation, was Cohen covering up a criminal act? Or was he covering up someone's completely stupid indiscretions?
Yeah, moral peccadillo.
Moral peccadillo. Yeah, well, that's a good way of putting it. And the other question is that, you know, if he utilized his, you know, a slush fund that was set up by the individual in question, or he used his own money, then there's no campaign-related issue here of, you know, the misuse of campaign funds. Now, we just saw another thing pop up just the other day, Chuck, where a congressman from California has now been stripped of all of his committee assignments by Speaker Paul Ryan because it has come out and he's been indicted, he and his wife both, of the misuse of campaign dollars for personal use. Duncan Hunter, that's the Duncan Hunter the younger, not Duncan Hunter, right, the elder, who was previously held the seat in California, but his son, dynastic succession, it's a bad idea, but his son basically took over his seat, which was obviously with that name as a safe seat, because I think Duncan Hunter the elder held that seat for what?
Many years, or something
of that nature?
Many years.
Many terms. So this 41-year-old child of his, who took the seat over after Hunter retired, he and his wife decided that campaign monies were theirs to play with, and they did. They played heavily. They went out to big fancy dinners. They bought sports events tickets, you know, sent their relatives to, like, NFL football games, bought, you know, all kinds of ridiculous stuff, bought a new door for their front door of their house and all these other things using campaign money, which is illegal. It's a misuse of campaign dollars. And that's what they're trying to hook on to Trump with Cohen, is that this was money through that the campaign was spent, that came from the campaign to supposedly pay off Stormy Daniels and whoever else there might be. And, of course, that this rises to the level of an impeachable offense. Well, I'm just going to throw it out there, Chuck, and I'm not trying to defend Donald Trump, and he's probably was a cad in many respects in his life. And many of us, if we had the same opportunity, probably couldn't resist the temptation either. But that if this rises to the level of an impeachable offense, then we need to put Bill Clinton in prison. Because Bill Clinton used the power of his office to obtain sexual favors from someone under his authority.
Yeah, bottom line.
And for the Democrat, you can't take someone out of office because of sex.
No, it's just about sex when it was just about perjury.
Exactly. Well, that was the handy let's shift the story. And that seems to be the overarching theme is the Democrats are desperately trying to shift every story they can shift But it's starting to fall apart on them, Chuck.
It's been falling apart for a while, but people are...
And so I believe that really it's the beginning of the end for the Democratic spin machine, and it's just the end of the beginning for Trump's being able to change the entire environment in D.C.
Nice way to wrap that up since we are out of time. Thank you for that, Barry. That was a nice way to finish that off. Well, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.